In honor of Earth Day, I would like now to take a closer look at a green initiative in Portland with considerable promise, the Portland Clean Energy Fund, or PCEF for short. PCEF was a ballot initiative that passed by an overwhelming margin in Portland in 2018. It was designed and promoted by a BIPOC-led coalition of environmental and community justice organizations. The program levies a 1% tax on gross revenues of the largest corporations with sales in Portland, which will generate an estimated $50 million annually to support Green New Deal type projects targeted at low-income and BIPOC communities. PCEF recently made its first grants, which included 45 awards to nonprofit organizations representing various BIPOC and low-income communities for a wide range of projects, including building green infrastructure, sustainable urban agriculture, and green job training programs. PCEF is unique in the country as a citywide Green New Deal and serves as a model for similar initiatives elsewhere. But for those of us in the climate justice activist community, PCEF is not an endpoint. It is rather an important step on the way to a more radical restructuring of our society in order to undo centuries of environmental racism and avert climate disaster. The PCEF campaign was groundbreaking, and not just in getting real benefits into BIPOC and low-income communities, but also in opening up further organizing possibilities. Today on the show, I have two guests with me. Anissa Pemberton is the Portland Clean Energy Fund Coalition Coordinator at the Coalition of Communities of Color. Growing up in rural Illinois, Anissa faced the climate crisis at a young age from the pollution from industrial agriculture and manufacturing in their community. They began working with the Portland Clean Energy Fund as a field organizer in 2018 and began to manage and advocate for the Portland Clean Energy Fund Coalition in 2020. Also with me today is Adriana Vos André, who is the co-founder of 350 PDX and a chief petitioner for the Portland Clean Energy Fund ballot initiative. Adriana was literally at the meeting when the idea for a Portland-style Green New Deal initiative was hatched back in 2015. Welcome to the Old Mole, Anissa and Adriana.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
I would like to start our conversation today by looking back at the campaign and how it unfolded. It was a coalition campaign, which meant that many organizations were involved, coming from a wide variety of experiences and perspectives. But at the very beginning of the campaign, a decision was made to establish the leadership of the BIPOC community within the campaign. How did you make that happen?
Building a diverse, inclusive coalition was actually key to PCEF's ultimate success. It turned out to be crucial not only to the ultimate success of winning the initiative campaign, but also it really helped us further the other central goals of the coalition, which was building the political power of BIPOC and marginalized communities in our city and beyond, and growing a large, inclusive, intersectional movement that was capable of bringing about not just incremental transactional change, but really the necessary transformational change that so that we can really truly begin to address the root causes of the climate crisis from the bottom up. It's important to note that PCEF wasn't drafted as a climate measure and then had social justice and racial justice tacked on, but rather from the beginning, there were co-equal goals, recognizing that these are related to the root causes of the crisis itself. Paradoxically, due to the shared sense of an extreme urgency around the global climate crisis, it became increasingly clear that we actually needed to slow down to allow time for the relationships to develop and for organizations to be able to really build the staff capacity to participate more genuinely and deeply. We actually met for years before we got close to a public campaign. Building trust was key. And once we built that trust to really, you know, make huge strides and take big risks together, one of the lessons learned here is that it takes really being present, being open to new practices, and to really be willing to explore what it means to center frontline leadership. And again, it's like our steering committee was very intentional about which organizations they subsequently then invited into the core coalition. Each were individually interviewed and were carefully vetted by the coalition's BIPOC leadership to ensure that they would actually follow and support frontline leadership and were ready to embrace these values.
Did you find in general that that was a challenge for an organization like PSR or 350 PDX to engage in those ways?
Well, I think that at the time, you know, we certainly there was a strong desire in leadership of our organization already at the time to center frontline leadership. And we had recognized how important this was to our work, to our movement building work, to our core mission. One of the biggest challenges, I would say, was to slow down, you know, because we're so used to doing things, to like moving as fast as we can and to feeling that urgency and so forth. So to take that time to slow down, that time it really takes to build trust, that is a major challenge.
I just wanted to jump in and add one thought. I was talking to an elder who was part of the original group of folks that put this coalition together this morning. And he mentioned to me that there also had to be a lot of truth telling, a lot of naming of how the environmental movement has excluded BIPOC communities in the past and what the history has meant for that. And sometimes that meant individual organizations, but often it was a broader pattern of behavior that is kind of hard to nail down to one organization or one group of people or an individual. It's funny, I worked at 350 PDX coming into the campaign. And I think there was just a little bit of a learning curve, you know? I mean, I think a lot of white folks are new to these conversations. So on the volunteer basis where I mostly worked, I just noticed that people were really excited to do the campaign, but people were also feeling, you know, kind of uncomfortable because they weren't used to this type of organizing.
Let me shift to a slightly different but related topic, is the relationships that you built with labor. There's another kind of historic divide between environmental groups and labor groups that you somehow managed to bridge. How did you do that?
First of all, labor unions and groups, you know, although often in solidarity with each other, are each unique in their mission, character, and politics. The focus here, I would, in your question, is, I think, refers to our relationship with the building trades. And there's a long history here between the building trades and environmental organizations, both here, but also across the nation, really, that there's been a major challenge in forging alliances. And this was sort of exemplified when I and another 350PDX leader at the time, Rick, initially reached out to some of the local building trades leaders very early on. A number of things that we heard is that our groups, 350PDX included, had a very strong mission of opposing new fossil fuel infrastructure projects. In this case, one of the big ones was Jordan Cove. They wanted us to like at least go from opposing to be neutral, which of course, and for them, that was like, dude, this is our number one issue. And for us, it was also our number one issue in the other direction. So like just starting that conversation from, you know, when we've been on the opposite sides, you know, was incredibly challenging. The other points that were brought up, and I've heard this from many others who have been trying to forge these relationships, is that the just transition jobs that environmentalists were kind of trying to bring about were seen more by the building trades as sort of future possibilities that may or may not be realized. Whereas something like Jordan Cove was like shovel ready, that would bring immediate jobs to their membership. And moreover, the fossil fuel infrastructure work were typically union work, whereas the preponderance of jobs in the renewable energy and energy efficiency sectors, including local programs at the time, were not. The initial conversations, they didn't move very much at that point. You know, getting SEIU and AFSCME were relatively easy because there were some relationships, especially between, you know, certain BIPOC and labor leaders. The building trades was a much longer and tougher road. So first of all, the right messenger. So building trades leadership, they actually liked organizations like Verde that build good labor relationships and provided skilled jobs to under-resourced neighborhoods. Secondly, momentum. When they saw that the large piece of coalition that we had built had a serious chance of actually passing the measure, that certainly made a difference as well. Like, it was not just some future distant thing, it was actually something that could be real and very soon. The other thing is pressure from their rank and file. They were saying later, in reflection, that their rank and file, especially millennials and Gen Z, they want to see more, they want to be part of this renewable energy economy. And there's recognizing the sheer number of just even electricians needed over the next decade for this major transition to happen. The leadership felt sort of some pressure from internally that, like, they couldn't just oppose PSEF when their rank and file was seeing themselves as part of this transformation. The other thing that mattered was that language in the measure had things like they provided wages at rate equal to at least 180% of the state minimum wage. And especially that PSEF would create a pipeline to union apprenticeship by funding pre-apprenticeship training was really, really important to them as well. So they saw that we were taking, that we were not only having these conversations, but we were really like incorporating things that were very important to labor, to building trades in particular, into the language.
Part of the explicit aim of the PSEF campaign was not just to pass a ballot initiative, but it was also to build a movement. So I'm interested in how that additional aim of the organization changed your on-the-ground tactics and strategies.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think one thing that's helpful to keep in mind is, I think when, at least from what elders have told me, when the PSEF coalition got put together, I think we were all thinking about how can we revolutionize the clean energy sector? How can we make this a more inclusive sector? And I think that kind of led to this really broad coalition building over time, you know, where we had to engage a lot of different types of interests. We had over 200 endorsing organizations on our voter pamphlet, which was at the time and may still be the largest amount of endorsing organizations in Oregon's history. Yes, and there was some amazing organizing happening behind the scenes to make that happen. I think from my point of view, once it passed, and this is just as a field organizer, I realized in the moment that we really had something here, that we had something to work with that really represented my interests, that represented the broad swath of interests. I think since the movement has really taken its lessons from the Portland Clean Energy Fund campaign. I've seen it on a statewide level with the Oregon Clean Energy Opportunity campaign, the organizing there. While we're in the state legislature, we're still very much trying to decolonize the work we're doing. We're still very much trying to lead with trust first and really work on being transparent and being open. But I really feel like PSEF planted a seed of, wow, we don't have to just be okay with having false solutions or, you know, as Adriana pointed out, these intermittent, very like not systemic solutions. We can actually ask for what we need and we'll get it. And I think that's really the power of PSEF. It really empowered a ton of people in the movement to think broader and to be honest about what they wanted. And I think it also made us trust each other more. And at the end of the day, you can't put a price on that in terms of movement mm-hmm. building. I think relationships are the secret sauce of organizing work. I think without those, we would not be getting half of the things done that we get done.
Going forward, how are you planning to build on the tremendous success that you've had?
The steering committee, it's all the same organizations, but there's a lot of new people at the table, younger people. I'm really excited. There's like a lot of LGBTQ plus people, which really changes the ways that I think we're having certain conversations about things. We decided that we were going to look into some things and we're still looking into them. It's very much in a research phase. But a lot of the organizations are involved in the Oregon Clean Energy Opportunity campaign, which I think is a really great way for us to build our own political knowledge and our muscle and work across difference with rural districts, frankly. I think one thing, being from a rural community, that PSEF couldn't address is, you know, rural folks who often have a much higher energy burden. In certain parts of the country, low-income rural folks are paying 15% of their income towards energy costs. So depending on where you live and your financial circumstances, it can be really intense. So we have a Healthy Homes Bill that will help upgrade people's homes and help folks stay safe and healthy in the wildfires and all of this other stuff that's happening every year. And then there's the energy affordability bill as well. And that bill will help set up a low-income ratepayer class at all of the utilities so that if you make under a certain amount of money, your people who make more money kind of supplement what you're going to be paying, which is a great bill. And both of those are bipartisan bills, which is really exciting. I think that's the thing about what's happening in the movement right now is I think we're all getting, in a weird way, more ideological and less attached to what traditionally is seen as like possible. And I can say just personally, I have a lot of conversations with my folks who are both rural Republicans, very conservative, and they always get really excited about the work I'm doing. And I think it's because it's not a regressive tax system. It's not to create more taxes on them. It's really targeting who has the money and where is money concentrated. And that's been our approach in the movement. And I hope that continues to be our approach because I think it's the right one. I think it's really actually getting at what we want and actually getting at what most people want.
It sounds like PSEF then is getting its fingers into a lot of different areas of organizing, and after breaking down barriers between white activists and BIPOC activists and breaking down barriers between labor and environmentalists, you're now taking on that urban-rural divide, which is really, really important work to be doing. I'm sorry that we're out of time because this is a really interesting conversation, but we'll link on our website to your websites and some of the reports that you've put out. Yeah, Anissa sure. Pemberton and Adriana Vos Andre, thank you so much for joining me today. We'll have to continue the conversation. I feel like we barely scratched the surface.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.